7. The Psychological Fallacies of Risk. Most people who think they are investing are speculating, and most people who think they are speculating are gambling. Unknown. One day in the summer of 1981, my partner Larry Broderick and I met in Las Vegas with one of our best customers, Conrad Panette, a French-Canadian and the manager of a very large lumber company in Canada. He was very wealthy and a big baccarat player. We got to Vegas and checked into the Hilton, since that's where Conrad liked to stay. This was the first trip to the Las Vegas Hilton for Larry and me, and they didn't know us from Adam's off ox, but they knew Conrad. He was a very big player, and they loved him. All they want in Vegas is a guy who will play, and Conrad would play. We met Conrad in the hotel lobby, and the first thing he said was, "What kind of a line do you boys want?" I said, "I don't know. Well, why don't I just get you set up for $10,000? $10,000? I really didn't want to lose $10,000. "Ah, we'll just set you up with a line. Don't worry about it." So when I got to the casino, all I had to do was sign a piece of paper, and they gave me $2,000 or $3,000 in chips. I just signed, and they gave me chips. "Hey, this is kind of neat," I thought to myself. "It's not like I even had to have the money." Conrad wanted to warm up before going to play baccarat. His warm-up was to sit down at a blackjack table with a $50 minimum bet. Now, this was at a time when I might have been trading 20 or 30 or 40 contracts at a crack as a local trader. On 20 contracts, I might be making or losing $1,000, $3,000, or even $5,000 in an hour in the pit. Serious money. So in context, $50 blackjack wasn't a lot of money. But when I sat down at that table, $50 sure seemed like an awful lot of money. I said to myself, "What am I doing betting $50? This is nuts." But he was the customer, and Larry and I wanted to make him happy. Well, in half an hour I was down about $500 playing warm-up. I said, "Ah, this is not good. I'm not having fun here. I've had it with this warm-up stuff. Let's go try this baccarat thing." Baccarat was neat. It's been a game for the rich in France and Italy since the 15th century. I was rich in 1981, so I wanted to play. In the casinos, it's always off to the side. It's roped off, and they have to unfasten a velvet rope to let you in. It's where the big guys play. The riffraff was out there throwing craps and playing roulette, and the big boys were in here at the fancy table where the waitresses catered to you and got you anything you wanted to drink. They served you brand-name drinks at the baccarat table. I liked that. A guy met us at the velvet rope and said, "Mr. Panette, Mr. Paul, Mr. Broderick, we're glad to have you." We sat down and signed a little piece of paper, and the guy shoved a whole bunch of chips in front of us. I had never played baccarat before, but I'd read about it in the James Bond book, Goldfinger. The first thing you learn about baccarat is that there really are no decisions to make other than which way to bet, player, house, or tie, and how much to bet. In blackjack, you're making choices. Do you want a card or not? In addition to how much you want to bet. In baccarat, there are no decisions about the cards. The rules make all the decisions. The game is determined entirely by chance. The dealer deals two cards to the two sides, house and player, and the rules dictate whether or not a third card is drawn. The object of the game is to draw cards adding to 9. Tens and face cards count as 0. The dealer makes sure the bettors follow the inflexible rules. The strategy of baccarat players is similar to what traders use in the markets. They look for trends. The players get a little scorecard. Across the top it says house, player, and tie, and it has columns under the headings. After every hand, they put a little X under the appropriate heading, depending on who won. What they're looking for is a run of wins by either the house or player. So if the house wins three straight hands, for instance, they will bet on the house on the fourth hand. Conrad was explaining all this stuff, most of which made little sense to me. But he was the hotshot gambler and supposedly knew what he was doing. So I started playing the look-for-the-run routine and betting the minimum $25. Well, somewhere along the line, I was down about $2,000 with this Mickey Mouse looking for runs. I was getting very bored and more than a little upset. $2,000 is real money. I don't know what else I would have done with $2,000, but I can think of a lot of things I could have done, like bought two pairs of Lucchese boots or a new shotgun. Well, at about 3 o'clock in the morning, we got a new dealer and a new dealing shoe. The first two hands in the new shoe came up player. Conrad looked at us and said, "Guys, this is it. I feel it. This is it. We're gonna get a run." So he doubled his bet. He was betting $100 or $200 at a crack. I still bet my $25 and we bet on player. Player won the third hand. I left the $50. Player won again. I left the $100. Player won again. Well, before the run ended, player had won 16 straight hands. Luckily for us, somewhere around the 10th or 11th hand, we started taking some money off of the table and lowering our bets. Conrad made about $40,000. Broderick and I each made about $7,000. Now it was 4 o'clock in the morning in Las Vegas, and we had all this free money that had just shown up out of the sky. You can get into a lot of trouble in Las Vegas with that much free money that you don't need, didn't expect to have, and don't care if you have the next day. Life is fraught with risk. Crossing the street is a risk. Driving a car is a risk. Getting married is a risk. And so is having children. Needless to say, starting and operating a business is a risk, and so is participating in the markets. Risk is defined as the possibility of suffering a loss. It's called probability only if you can assign a numerical value to the likelihood of the loss occurring. In none of life's activities is there a guarantee of success or of having things turn out the way you want. Obviously, the types of risk we are interested in are financial in nature, risk that produces monetary losses. Most people don't know whether they are investing, speculating, or gambling, and to the untrained eye, the activities are very similar. Looking back on my trip to Vegas, I can see the similarity between the casino and the brokerage house. The brokers are the croupiers. The commissions are similar to the house percentage. The boardrooms are the casinos themselves. The stock exchange and the ticker tape are the gambling devices. However, the markets and gambling games are similar only in that they each involve the possibility of monetary loss. They are different not only in the legal sense, but also in the economic sense. The big difference is, gambling creates risk while investing, speculating, assumes and manages risk that already exists.